Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Cuff the Shock Entertainment Report. Saturday, late night Saturday talk. And we have a guest tonight, Juan Cloy, law enforcement expert. Any of you that listen to my podcast here on Blog Talk Radio and on Springer know much about him around the world. And many of you have worked with him around the nation and world, too, and especially right here in the state of Mississippi. I had planned to talk about a few other things, but he's on hold, and my apologies for the day in the show. My cell decided to reset itself right at showtime. So my apologies for the delay, but it is late night talk, and it has, I don't know how I'm sounding so chipper because there's been so much going on, and Juan would definitely share advice with us and his take on what's actually going on. At least we did have an exciting thing, successful launch of Launch America, SpaceX private and government. So that was a successful launch. It just excited me. Ever since I've been on this earth, I have loved to watch space shuttles and rockets launch, and just amazing. That's one thing our mom, my late mom, and I love to do, watch the shuttle takeoffs and the rockets launch. And thank God we had a successful launch in the afternoon on Saturday. Before I get Juan on the call, I was concerned, are we or are we not under a nationwide curfew? And I guess Juan can explain to us regarding that, what's actually going on with the curfew, because I was watching live footage from Charleston, and they mentioned, there was going to be a countrywide curfew. And I see where different respective cities do have curfews happening. Right before airtime, I noticed on Twitter that MSNBC tweeted out that the California National Guard has been deployed to Los Angeles. Mayor Eric Garcetti has said California joins 11 other states and D.C. that have activated a guard in response to the protests. And these are protests on top of a pandemic. And law enforcement professional Juan Cloy would share with us how to deal with the pandemic, to be vocal during this uprising in America. Again, he's a law enforcement professional. He has been assistant police chief, work with the FBI. The list goes on and on, but he can tell you more about himself. But knowing Juan, he would like to talk to us about our own safety and how to found ourselves during these multiple situations that we are dealing with here in America and worldwide, since our listenership is worldwide. So like I always do, I like to shout the top 5 listening countries: native U.S., U.K., China, Morocco, and am I forgetting somebody? Morocco, China, U.K., U.S., and I know I'm not forgetting. Canada knocked Kenya off of the list. And okay, U.S., U.K., China, U.K., Morocco. Okay, U.S., Canada, China, U.K., Morocco, and all listeners from the smallest town to the largest city. Thank you for supporting your listenership. So glad to get back to an interactive format of where calls can come in and also we can turn the chat room. And so grateful to have Juan on the call. all with us. And I had done a little research regarding nationwide curfews. And in 1945, the government gave America a nationwide curfew for the first time. VJ Day in Times Square, New York City, where all the bars were as closed at midnight, and many, many, many people were upset about that, and of course, bar owners also. So I have shared an article from the Smithsonian regarding the one time, the first and last time that we had a nationwide curfew, and it was in 1945 during the heyday, during the Ritz. And all, and so that is when we had a nationwide curfew. Because it really inspired me when I heard that we were getting a nationwide curfew. So maybe because many cities have chosen to have a nation, a citywide or countywide curfew. I don't know. Maybe one have take that information out, see what's really going on. Because we pretty much had a nationwide curfew going on with the pandemic that we're experiencing, right? So, wow. I mean, wow. This is all I can say is wow, oh my God, and pray. Well, thank you all for tuning in, and it's time to talk with Mr. Juan Cloy.
Hello, Bethany, how are you?
I'm doing fine, how are you? Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me? It's worldwide podcast, of course, internet. Yes. You want to go right into it? Where do you want to start? Because there's so much going on.
Well, I guess we could start with you. What you initially mentioned, the nationwide curfew. And I'm pretty sure that the only person or the only entity that can activate a nationwide curfew would be the president. And so we haven't heard anything, and then they would have to get that out nationwide as well. So it would have to be on all your major stations and all your major newspapers and all your social media outlets. Well, you just can't kind of quietly activate it. The first order of business is letting people know, communicating it. Now, of course, obviously in different cities and states, I'm sure just about everybody has a curfew, you know, but just depending on that time, there's a time difference in curfews across the country. I think California has an 8 p.m. curfew, which is pretty early. So, but of course, or at least Los Angeles, that's due to what's going on with the protesters. I'm been watching, obviously, just like everyone else, pretty much all day for the last couple of days, and you kind of dread night because you know when nightfall comes, it's gonna get worse. But you want people to be safe on both sides. You don't want anybody to be harmed. But you know, we have to have some things change. As quiet as it kept. In 2015, I quit cold turkey from policing. I didn't have a formal job plan. I just quit because I wanted to start my own training company and train officers on how to have better relationships with the public. That was my sole goal because I was sick and tired of seeing the civil uprisings that we had. Remember in Baltimore and in Ferguson and across the country in Chicago and whatnot due to several incidents with Michael Brown, the in-custody death of the gentleman in Baltimore, and then the Eric Garner. So I just kind of got tired of it, and just looking at from my industry, it's really stressful on me because I see I'm looking from the inside out, meaning that I see things, I hear things that the normal person doesn't see or hear. I know that we can do a lot better, and I had an old chief that used to tell me, don't come to me with a problem if you don't have a solution, right?
Wow.
And so I have solutions that I've thought of and talked to people about, and I'm going to actually sit down and talk to someone about tomorrow, a legislator, because one of the main issues that we have, you all, is that, and I'm going to say you all, and I'm going to include myself in that, is that we put people in positions of power, and we do not have a system of checks and balances on these people well enough to make sure that they are doing what they're supposed to do. And so I'll speak from the president, which is the most popular, you know, the most well-known issue that we're dealing with now. It's a constant ebb and flow of can President Trump do this or can not do that? Should we watch him do this and then tell the truth about that? We're just going on and on with this, you know. And so we've got to remember first and foremost that we're all people and humans have faults, right? So
right. You read my mind because I'm thinking you are law enforcement officers are human, and those that don't know
right.
you have an amazing background and when you were raised, you have an amazing background. Being a human, you can definitely relate to what the protesters are feeling. Just being a human being.
100%. Yeah, 100%. And if you want, I'll go ahead and give you a flash in the pan of my background. I'm currently 54 years old. I've been in policing for the last 25 years. I worked in a metropolitan department for fairly large for 17 years. I worked in robber homicide, vice and narcotics, violent crime task force, you name it. Then I worked as a task force agent with the FBI for 9 years. And in that capacity, I've also worked pretty much any major crime that you can think of, whether it's kidnapping from a cartel to bank robbery takeovers to carjackings to high-profile homicides. And then finally I went on to I was accepted to go to the FBI's coveted undercover school, and I was able to successfully graduate from there, and then I worked undercovers across the country. And then finally I left there, and then I was an administrator, a chief for 3 years. And after that, that's when I quit cold turkey and started my own training company and actually started working for a company out of D.C. where I traveled the country training police officers on how to have more positive interactions with the public, in particular youth, young adults. And so I got to train officers from Compton to Sacramento to, Norman, Oklahoma, to Lewiston and Auburn, Maine, Tampa, Florida, to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and on and on. So I would say I have a pretty well-rounded view of law enforcement because I was able to deal with these officers and command staffs across the country to kind of compare styles, right, and ideologies. And was able to meet some really great officers and some really great young people across the country, and see some even programs that that different cities are doing to keep their young people busy and out of trouble.
Right, and I love the training of community leaders like myself and average people and corporations also, because I had the pleasure of attending a couple of your sessions, and definitely helped me.
I kind of use, you know, I tell people you can go to training from people who learn with the school and learn things, but or you can get trained from people who have been through things. So I've been through quite a few violent events as a police officer. Unfortunately, able to witness people die right in front of my eyes at a very young age as a police officer, a rookie officer, right? And I was able to, again, just I say get thrown into the fires of violence, you know.
I remember my niece asked you a question that I had never thought of asking you. And that was something, you know. But you told us the honest truth, but that shocked me that she asked you that question. I've known you forever, never thought about asking you that question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess since we've got this all playing out, I have CNN playing in the background in front of me. I guess before my time runs out, I want to just kind of give you a quick overview of what I see to fix this problem, okay? Especially
okay.
If you're talking to somebody. I literally quit my job. I did not have a job. There was no plan.
Right.
I quit my job, and you can if you research me, look up my name. It's spelled J-U-A-N, and my last name is spelled C as in Charlie, L-O-Y, right? Juan.
Right.
So if you look up my name, you'll see a quote that I
it's okay. Is it okay to say also that you understand and that you were raised, exposed to a certain organization also?
Exposed to a certain organization? You mean raised?
When you when you were growing up, didn't you know a lot about like the Black Panthers and that?
Oh, yeah.
You know how to be proactive in your community?
Yeah, I mean, I was raised in Indianapolis, so I wasn't raised in the South. So, and my father did all kind of things, you know. So, the funny thing about it is I'm Black, but I was raised in an all-white neighborhood until I was 13. I was
right.
A Black kid in the entire neighborhood. So, I have a unique view of both sides, right?
Right.
Racially. I guess I'm a little more, I don't really think about hardly ever. But I guess you're right. That had something to do, I'm sure it had something to do with something, you know.
Yes. That's one thing, you and I both grown up multiculturally, where we can pretty much associate with everybody. And so, now everybody's not blessed with that. Everybody's not blessed with that. That's why we're dealing with this.
Right, right. So let me ask you this. How much time do I have really quick?
To be honest, we can talk. My topic, word. You know, well, it's such breaking news going on. You have about 30 more minutes. We have about 30 more minutes.
Okay. Well, I don't want to
use this is important. But if you know, as long as you would like to go, the show will be about 30 minutes. And you know, the topics are coronavirus, COVID-19, reopening of Jackson, Mississippi. When you look at the promotion of the show, this state of Mississippi reopening of America. This is all before all these riots and hot topics and so on And so I pretty much have been talking about COVID-19 we're fine, everyone, you know, the whole house. It was breaking news on last Sunday show. So usually the family is private. Mom and I are the ones that would share our business. It was breaking news on the show Sunday that my little 7-year-old niece, who loves Juan, was diagnosed with COVID-19, and so everybody's doing fine. Everybody's doing fine, so all the listeners worldwide have been concerned. We're doing fine. But I talked to the health department so I can focus on me, because I'm not talking and telling other family business. But on Tuesday, the Mississippi Department of Health contacted me, and I'm in a 14-day quarantine. All my answers were no to the questions I've been tested. But I pray negative, but everything's been going pretty good. But it's funny because I've been quarantining since the beginning one, but it is weird when the government tells you your life is restricted. It's a different feeling. Mm-hmm. I can't venture out as long as I wear a covering my mouth, important things. But I've been, like I told him, I've been quarantining anyway. I've been quarantined from the beginning. Anyway, so they told me I need to up it, just up my game, and I have to, you know, keep my distance from my little niece and everybody, social distancing and everything. But it's different. I have been quarantining myself, but when people call from the government, you've been a person that works the government, and then I get a detailed letter instructing me that I cannot do it. My lifestyle is restricted. I've never been arrested and put in jail for thing, only citation. So I can imagine it feels similar to like house arrest. You know?
Mm-hmm. Right. Right, right.
Because I read the fine print. If I disobey, I can get in trouble. From $500 to $5,000 fine to a brief stay in jail to time in prison.
Right.
So this is the real deal, people, listeners. I just wanted to say that right quick. But yes, Juan, you can continue on. We have at least 30 minutes to talk.
Okay. So really quick, okay. let me talk about the culture of police, and I'm going to talk about myself. I'm not going to talk about anybody else. Okay.
Okay.
So in 1995, I started policing, and you're talking about a kid who had the greatest childhood ever. All we did was play, and have a great time with our girls, never worried about fighting and all that good stuff. So I become a police officer, and my second week as a cop, I end up getting involved in a shooting where I had to discharge my weapon and shoot someone, and so did the guy. One of my partners next to me, a training officer standing right next to me, this gentleman unfortunately had stabbed to death and hacked to death one of his co-workers and was going.
Oh my goodness!
Came out of the restaurant he was in and was going to the restaurant next McDonald's right next door to where he worked and finished. I guess he was going to go in there and harm some other people and we kind of cut him off. So from that. I got this reputation of being the rookie who would, you know, that guy's going to be all right. Because, you know, rookies, anytime you have a new employee anywhere, you know, people are always skeptical of you because you're new. But especially as a cop, mm-hmm. they want to know if you control the line, the thin blue line, the whole fraternal order of police, that whole this culture of police. And so that's kind of what I did, you know, for a while. In my city, there's a song, and you can look it up. It's on YouTube. It's called, a guy wrote it years ago, back in the 70s or 80s. The song is titled, You Ain't Been Kicked in the Head Till You've Been Kicked by the Jackson Police, right?
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Yeah, it's a song. It's on YouTube. You ain't been kicked in the head.
I can't believe I don't remember that song. I can't. Wait a second. I definitely would be checking on YouTube.
Back then, it wasn't something that we would listen to. It was something that, you know, back then we were kids when it came out. But so my point being, this is a culture of violence and policing, period, point blank, right? And
right.
I knew all the little tricks of the trade, and I was taught them. And so when you're taught them, when it's time for you to train an officer, you kind of train the officer what you learned and train the officer on how to write reports, form reports, or whatnot. And so there's this culture of – it's always this tense culture, Bethany, of who is the guy that's going to toe the line the most and who is the guy that's 50-50. Who's the guy that you don't want around you at all? Because he's gonna tell everything, right? If you get in trouble, if you have to go to internal affairs, and so those guys get this reputation. Everybody gets their own little set reputation, and so you have these silos, right? These different silos within the culture, and so some of the I'm going to slightly curse, some of the badasses end up maybe being on a narcotics unit or a SWAT team or whatever, right? Because they know that you're not really afraid, you're going to bring the heat. And so, of course, I ended up in narcotics. I ended up in street-level narcotics mm-hmm. unit. I ended up on the SWAT team, right? Managed to stay out of trouble, thank God. Hindsight being 2020, when you look back at that and you say, hey, what's wrong with policing? Or what is wrong with policing? And that, in a nutshell, is what's wrong. It's from your inception, you're taught that you are against the people now. You're not one of the people anymore. We call you all civilians. You're a civilian now, right? Now, in the military, they call you a civilian. But in the military, you're pretty much in the military 24/7, right? You're in the military. You can live on the military base if you're in full time, right? And a lot of people do live on the base. And so they don't come in contact a lot of time with regular people, with civilians. But as a police officer, when you get done with your tour of duty, you go where?
You go back to your neighborhood. You go back to your family. You go back to living your life and blending in with your friends and being
Exactly. So we live this dual culture. This is a dual culture. So if you're looking at it, basically police officers live all these different lives. They have all these different lives that they live, all these different lives that we live. And so because, number one, we're asked to do so many different things. We're not paid that much. There's not much money spent on us for psychiatrists, social workers, for us to go see social workers. And it's a testosterone-filled profession, meaning that if I come in and I broke my hand fighting, then I'm a tough guy. If I broke my leg kicking somebody, then I'm a tough guy. But if I come in, Bethany, and I say I'm not feeling too well mentally, right? I don't feel great mentally. I got some stuff going on. Then what are they saying about me? They start saying, he's going to eat his gun or he's going to do something crazy. So that in itself, the job in itself, will drive you crazy and mentally ill, which will make you physically ill, which I've been bad as well. But you can't go into roll call and say, hey, I've been thinking about killing myself, or I've been having visions of shooting.
Right.
You can't do that, right? So you don't do it, right? And so you just say,
wow.
And I'm using that so I hadn't had anyone thoughts, but I'm just saying, you have to keep that hush up. And so when you do feel like that, and it gets worse and worse, then you may try it for yourself, right? Or you may see yourself putting your knee on somebody's neck and back and resting on them just because you feel like it, right? Until they
right.
die. So, again, this is a culture of
someone
problems.
Them in you. That's crazy.
So, number one, if you're going to say that we're going to have these guys ride around with guns, badges, cars, rifles, shotguns, tasers, pepper spray, then you have got to put some money building these people up and keeping them sane and keeping them in line. You understand that? You can't have a small city of 15,000 people and a megalomaniac mayor and an ego-filled board of councils, and they come up and they say, hey, let's have a police department, right? And we'll have this police department. And then the police officers can basically do what we want them to do because, you know, we can fire them. And, you know, I work somewhere like that, right?
I know when you were considered to become chief of Jackson, and when you were campaigning to become a sheriff of Hinds County, I know one thing that's very important to you is the morale of departments.
Morale, yes, it's very important.
And so there's a morale problem, honestly, around America in police departments.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So do you think we'll be hearing from, what is it, the National Police Association anytime soon? Is that the organization,
the
national?
You
think we'll be hearing?
And you have a National Police Association down in at.
Yeah, because I know my mom now, we always supported like the National Police Association.
Yeah, that's in Tampa, Florida, and when I was a police union president, we dealt with them as well. They're kind of they kind of thrive off of small departments paying their dues and making sure that they get the dues so they can do work. So they can do work for them.
You think we should be in a press conference from them soon, right?
Possibly.
Wow. Wow, yeah, that's something to think about, that we, departments and the community, we need to understand that there is a mental side, that law enforcement officers are human, there's a mental side to it. And I have been listening to people to share their stories, from celebrities to everyday people, talk about how they always, I even heard Mayor Lumumba discuss how he was giving the talk. I never was given that talk. And you know me pretty much since the 80s. I've never was given that talk. I'm one of those people, yes, born, raised, actually Mississippi. I'm one of those people that always look at law enforcement and police pursuits as awesome. And when I watched that videotape Tuesday, and then when I watched the guy live stream his killing in Indianapolis back in early May, oh my God! I'm like, these are not office friendly at all. See, I never given the talk because when my little niece and nephew, sometimes when they see our other friends in law enforcement, some of your peers, they literally will go the other way. And I'm like, no, what are you doing? That's the police. That's sad. It's a sad. Law enforcement, police, to protect and serve the people, community. We should be running from police. We should be running to you and embracing you. And then also while you're sharing about the mental aspect, we should be able to embrace. But you're telling us how you are law enforcement trained to think, well, we're different. We're not part of society. We're part of society, but we're not.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Wow.
So,
sound like the community needs to take a look also. I'm speaking generally. I'm not speaking about case, but generally, because this is something that you and I have been, you've try to educate so many of us about anyway, how we need to deal with it from a mental and just a community perspective.
Yeah.
In a relationship. Yeah. Where we can prevent police brutality and then also disrespect. You know what's been my concern is that this will fuel cop killing of innocent good cops. And I've been praying so hard that doesn't start.
Well, you know, once you realize that all this is part of, I guess I've been in this for a while and been through a lot of violent episodes that I just accept the violence of things. And that's part of it. If somebody kills a cop or a cop, that's part of the circle that we're in, right? The cop kills somebody. The public has civil uprising. Some individual or individuals get really upset and take upon themselves to kill some cops, usually random cops, and then you go back to work. And it's just that's what we do. That's what we all do. Look what happened in Dallas when that young person had that automatic AR-15, and he was shooting the Dallas cops, and look where we are now.
And I was in Texas. I was in Texas at that time. I was in Sherman where I was living, but I happened to be friends with a couple of those officers, especially Brent Thompson. Brent, and I talk about him on the podcast. Brent Thompson was happened to have been a friend of mine, and he was a white cop, but guess what supported? Black Lives Matter. He used to talk to me about it. Black Lives Matter. You know, he was so into we all need to come together. Always. And when I heard about the shooting, I almost called him. Something told me, go and see what officers were murdered. His picture popped up first. Not Brent.
Wow.
No way. I mean, the cool Dallas PD officer I knew at that time. But what were you saying about that? That was really cool. And then that was a Black Lives Matter event, wasn't it? I'm like, no way. It was Brent murdered.
I don't know. I think he was
a proponent for the Black Lives Movement, and I don't even talk about the Black Lives Matter movement because I feel all lives matter. Blue lives matter too, you know? So I'm not saying I don't support it, but don't you all get on me about that. But he was more into it than me, talking about the Black Lives Matter movement.
Well, but
what you were talking about the mentality of the shooter.
Yeah, but the question still remains, once we get done with this, whenever we get done with it, what's going to change? What are we going to change, right? And so that I know that we're going to have to change, and I'm not thinking about this. I know that we're going to have to change. We're going to have to change, number one, training is going to have to be federally mandated. Right? It can't be state mandated. It has to be federally mandated. Recurring training where officers have cultural diversity training, conflict resolution, that's going to have to be 3 to 4 to 5 times a year, right? And it's going to have to be federally mandated and federally funded. And I say federally funded because there are hundreds of police departments that are going to say that they don't have any money, right, for training. Now,
right.
I've worked for several that don't even have a training budget. If they do, it's very low. So training is one thing that is not a priority for police departments. Now, let me say this. Not all police departments, but most police departments, okay, especially recurring training. Now, they may have some domestic violence training 1 year, and then next year they may have some pursuit driving training the year after that, and then 10 years later, just myself, I haven't had defensive tactics training since 1995. Right?
Oh.
Since 1995, I have not had any defensive tactics training that was put on by the police department. I've had my own done, right? But so you're expecting me to be able to function in a hand-to-hand combat situation from training that I had in 1995, and it's 2020. You understand that?
Whoa.
And this is
no,
common.
That's
this is extremely common. This is, I'd say, about 90% of the police officers in this country have not had reoccurring defensive tactics training. Now, why do I say that? Is when you look for your listeners. When you get into physical altercation, right, or verbal altercation that may go physical, if you're confident and you're competent in your ability, you're less likely to use deadly force, right? I'm less likely to pull my gun, even think about my gun, right? Thursday, there was a huge, it would have been a bloodbath between me, this guy, and another deputy. And because I was just standing there looking at the guy, he was going crazy. He called me everything but a child of God for about 40 to 45 minutes. I just stood there and looked at him, right? I had my line I drew, right? He knew not to cross. But fact is, I go back to 20 years ago, the old one, me and that guy would have been rolling around in the dirt because he wasn't going to talk to me like that.
Right. Oh, my God. I know when I was canvassing, I'm not going to detail, but I know when I was canvassing for the company I was working for at PC, and I called you and told you about a wife beater, you were like, if I come down there, you're not going to be
right. Right, right. That's why I try to keep, So, but again, that's just, these are things that quite a few officers, they have to deal with, and you have a lot of officers that are fearful of their job and their life or certain individuals. So the first thing that they grab is their handgun in a physical altercation, right? And that's like a no-no in the profession, basically. If you're going to go, if a guy puts up his fist, and if you have a taser or pepper spray, you pull out your pepper spray. If you don't have anything, well, you pull up your fist too. You and the guy are just going to roll around in the dirt a while. But the no-no is if somebody pulls up their fist, you don't pull out your gun, right? But we have so many officers that can't handle themselves physically that that's all they feel that they have that they can do, pull out their gun, whether they're extremely overweight, extremely frail, right? And so that's a huge, huge, huge problem. It's just like one of the major problems that we have in law enforcement. And I can tell you that even from this situation in Minnesota, right, all four of those guys that were on Mr. Floyd, someone should have decompressed and reassessed the situation and thought that someone should have had the brain to say, hey.
Because I noticed the officer that committed the murder, he was not even the arrest officer. So why did he even end up being the one put him on the ground? The officer, I guess the Hispanic officer, just stood there.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't understand that.
Someone needed to take a leadership role, right? And that's another part.
Right.
Training that all officers need leadership. You don't have to be in the command staff to be a leader, because a police officer is supposed to be a leader in his community, right, his or her community. So somebody should have taken a leadership role, breathed, calmed down, and reassessed and said, hey, you know what? Get off his back, right? Let's put him back in the car.
It's a lady that was in the red and black.
Say again.
Oh, the lady that was kept yelling and asking him to get him yelling in the white and black, she said she was Minneapolis firefighter, paramedic.
Right, but again.
And she knew exactly what was happening.
Right. We had nobody that took a leadership role, that decompressed. We had nobody, right? So this is where we are now. We need a federal.
When murder is happening in front of your eyes,
say again.
When murder is happening in front of your eyes, it seems like you know to stop a murder from happening when it's your coworker or not.
That officer was really desensitized because he had literally no, just a blank expression. And when you witness violence, the guy had been on 19 years. So I'm sure he's witnessed a lot of stuff. You have to be desensitized. You can't survive as a cop or even as a paramedic or even as a doctor or an ER doctor. You cannot survive without desensitizing yourself. You won't survive. You'll die.
Wow.
You usually internalize all that stuff and end up drinking or smoking or doing something crazy. Especially if you don't exercise. That's a huge component of stress relief. Yeah.
Because the look in his eyes were really scary as he looked into the woman's phone. I mean, that was something. He was looking into her phone as he was pressing his knee into his neck. I was one of the first people to share that. It popped up on my feed early that following morning. And I reshared it, and as I watched it, my sister walked out. I was outdoors, and my sister walked in. I was crying. I'm like, "Have you seen this?" And I quickly reshared it and tagged you. You and Carlos Moore. And I'm like, "Oh, I could not believe what I had just seen." I'm like, "I hope this is fake news," but sadly, it wasn't.
So. I know it sounds like it's far-fetched or far-reaching, but when you have to have things federally mandated, but when you have things like this happen across the country, right, all these civil uprisings that happen across the country, that's the only thing that's gonna make sure that officers get what they need, right? You've got to make sheriffs and chiefs and mayors do things, because if you don't, it's not going to happen. I mean, it will not happen if we leave it up to state legislators and governors with these huge egos that says, you know, the federal government can't tell me what to do with this and that. No, that can't be the case, because these things have to be mandated. You know, we have to have a federally mandated hiring practice for all sheriffs and police departments, because they do not do background checks. There's no background checks being done, especially at these small departments in the country. Is made up by and large of small departments, 10-man, 15-man departments, right? The country, there's not many 200 and 300 officer police forces across the country. Not many at all. It's a lot of 10 to 15 and 20 and 30-man departments, right? And these departments do basically what they want to do. They do what they want to do, you know. And there's no repercussions, there's no penalties, right? You hire a guy, you don't do his background, the guy ends up raping somebody in the back of a police car, you just end up, you fire the guy and prosecute. But the question is, who did a background?
Those settlements and all that.
Yeah, it's a guy here that's been to...
Like here in Mississippi.
Yeah,
right.
Here in Mississippi, he's been to five departments, and each department he gets a sexual assault complaint. Finally, this last department, he got arrested. Now, what happened at the other four departments?
Right.
Four separate departments he's been to. When he gets a sexual assault complaint against the that is found to be true by female. Not just a complaint, it's found to be true, right? And so it's maddening. And so when you have things that happen like this, when you read an article I read today that the police union chief, the police union president for the Minneapolis Police Department, was sued by the current chief now for...
which department? What city?
I'm sorry?
Which city? What department of what city?
Minneapolis.
Okay.
Yeah. It's on my feed. He was sued by the current chief back in, I think, 08-09, and seven other black men for several issues. One of them was racial issues and things of that nature, right? Racial discrimination.
Sure.
Now, this man is currently the police union chief, the gentleman that was sued, right? So why is he the police union chief if he's got racial?
We have about 10 more minutes. The live... Like, if anybody wanted to call in, the calls were cut off, but we have about 10 to 15 more minutes. Okay.
Fine. So,
I'm listening. I hadn't heard about this.
I don't see
anyone. We can replay it also and reshare it too. And we reshare it. So, and you can too. Because you are sharing some important facts. You must come back, because we need to talk about more, and also what's going on locally too. But please continue this, because I did not know about what you're talking about.
Yeah, but again, it's on my Facebook feed. You can look at it.
Okay.
So yeah, it's just a systemic issue, and the most maddening part about it, at least for me, is why do we keep going through this, and nothing changes federally or statewide as far as statutes that mandate police to do certain things. Like I said, training, hiring practices, rehiring practices, termination practices, just to deal with the cultural issues of policing rather than sweeping all our issues slightly below the carpet. Yeah.
Wow. So recently in Jackson, I really don't know the whole story, but allegedly I've seen the news report regarding a JPD officer last week who I think Cypher even talked about it, but I know I've seen the news reports on our ABC and CBS and NBC affiliates regarding the JPD officer choking a suspect. Allegedly, I see the report, it looked like he was choking. I heard some say he said he wasn't choking the young man. So what are your thoughts regarding JPD? That was a black officer choking a suspect. As he was being filmed, and a female, a girlfriend, a mother, or someone stood right next to him telling him he cannot breathe.
Right.
That happened right here in Jackson only within the past couple of weeks. Do you know much about that?
Yeah, I have two thoughts. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you
and
hear me?
The listeners can hear you too. Yes. Can you hear me?
I have two thoughts on that as a cop and as a man, right? So as a man, I can tell you that there's the natural order of things is off, especially in the city I live in, meaning that kids, the young men challenge the older men on a regular basis, cop or no cop.
Yes.
Right? The young
uh-huh.
men challenge
right.
the older men on a regular basis. And you know as well as I do, an old lion will reprimand a young lion, right? An old lion will reprimand a young lion that gets out of line. That's in the animal kingdom. That's just the natural order of things in the animal kingdom. Now, I think, and I've said this before, when you have issues in school where there's no order in schools and the kids pretty much run the schools, right? And then it overflows into the street, right? And when you're going to calls as a police officer where the kids aren't doing what the parents say, and then the kid is on the street, and then he sees the cop, well, he's probably not going to do what the cop said, right?
Right.
And that cop.
Right. And what I've been hearing, people are taught to, they're not telling them to be disrespect the cops, but they're telling them to avoid them as much as possible. I guess
right,
even
right.
if they're doing a couple things, try to avoid them.
From what I heard on the video, the cop said, "I told you to leave, and you didn't leave." Right.
Oh.
So, now, let me say this. Yeah, you can hear it on the video plainly. He kept saying, "I told you to leave. You didn't leave." I'm not condoning what he did. I am not condoning what he did. But just to be honest with you, men have testosterone. You know, women have testosterone too. And when you challenge certain men, whether they're cop or not, and if you just catch that guy on the wrong day or the right day, something's gonna happen. Something is going to happen, right?
Right.
And I mean wrong day or right day by. The guy's girlfriend could have made him upset. He could have just left the call where he saw two dead bodies. You know, any number of things should have happened, right? And so what I caution people to do is if you have never done this job, and I'm telling you this for 1,000% fact, there is no way you can judge. There is it's impossible. It is absolutely impossible. Right? There's nothing you can do. You cannot judge. You can't say one word. You just can't. Because until you wake up in the middle of the night in cold sweats from nightmares and somebody chasing you, trying to kill you, you're going to the doctor because you got all these health issues and you don't know where they come from. And mind you, every cop is not like this. You know, some people, a lot of people don't internalize things. A lot of cops don't see things that other cops see. And you know, people don't handle things the same way, right? And then the other thing is some cops are just assholes, right? They just choke the kid regardless, right? So we're dealing with all these factors. Right. We're dealing with all these factors, you know. And quiet as it's kept, all cops don't like each other. There are some cops, there's cops that say, hey, man, I don't like that cop. That guy shouldn't even be a cop, right, because he's suspect. He's always sneaky. He's always trying to talk to some little young girl or something going. Something's always going on with this guy, right? So a lot of the good cops want the bad cops gone, but the flip side is that the good cops aren't saying much, right? They're just going to work. So you have a few of us saying things, and we deal with the repercussions after that, you know. If there are going to be any, but so by and large, it's just a constant cycle of violence, of disappointment, of low pay, of stress. Of marital issues, of home issues due to the job, and sometimes I just wonder why in the hell would anybody want to do this job anyway, right?
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking. Do they have like programs for the family, for the spouses and significant others and children? And do they have anything when in training? Do they incorporate any of that?
You'll find very few departments do anything like that. You just go to work.
It's like
working at Pepsi or something. It's not like working at Facebook or Google. You know, it's like working at Pepsi. Just shut up and go to work. Or working at a Nissan factory. Shut up and go to work. You know, we don't even want you to have a union. Shut up and go to work. And so that's pretty much what it is. And so when you get a chief,
that's a good point, because a lot of companies and corporations, city government across the nation have wellness programs. But you would think police departments would have some type of wellness program, and that helps mentally and just dealing with life situations.
So
wow,
if they ran the police department. Like, I guess Google, from what I hear, Google is a great company to work for, where you pour into your employee, right? When you have a happy employee, the employee treats his customer right, right?
Right. If I've ever gotten my master's, if I've ever gotten my bachelor's, I wanted to get my, I want to get my master's in industrial psychology. And so, that right there is a specialty in itself for those that are industrial psychologists, just to deal with police department.
Right. Yeah.
So industrial psychologists out there, help our police department, please.
Well, you know, like I just said, happy employee, happy customer. You're the customer, right? You are the civilian, you're the customer, and you're not happy. And the question is, the biggest question is, why aren't you happy? So I'd ask you that.
That's a good point.
You
so you know you're talking my kind of talk. Right. Well, the customers, we should have been saying something a long time ago, being the citizens and those that you're protecting and serving. We should have been noticed something that is not one-sided. The community, we look at it one-sided, the police, but the police need us, the community, also.
Yeah, why aren't you happy?
Right.
So if you can express in words why you're not happy with your police department, then I can pretty much bet you 100% that what you say is the same exact thing that they're going to say about their command staff or their mayor or their chief or their whoever, their sheriff or whatever. Whatever you say is going to be by them, right? You're rude.
See, I told Terry, I said, if I'm ever mayor of any city, Jackson, Dallas, small town, big city, you're my police chief. you and Kunzula, you be the police chief and Kunzula be head of security. I don't know which title, but I love James Davis, but we need to be able to hit the mentality of police officers.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Our time is almost run out. I hope you can call on Monday morning for 6:30 a.m.
Yes, sir.
Or will you be working, or can you call at 6:30?
I'll let you know tomorrow. Just check with me tomorrow.
When are you meeting with legislature?
I'm sorry?
You say you have an important meeting with a
Yeah, tomorrow.
Is that tomorrow? Okay. Okay, good. So keep us updated on that.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me on.
Thank you. How can we contact you? How can the public, the listeners, contact you?
How can you contact me? You can email me on my personal email. I don't hardly check my business email. I have entirely too many emails. I realized that when the pandemic came, I just don't even check emails now, but I check my personal. My personal email is my last name, Floyd. Again, that's C as in Charlie, L as in Lima, O as in Oscar, and Y as in Yankee. Floy 6911 at yahoo.com. Floyd 6911 at yahoo.com. I can be reached on Facebook just under my name, because it's only two of us. It's only two people in the world with my name, me and my son. And you'll know if you reach my son's Facebook.
Wow. That's cool. I thought my name was a plain Jane, Betty Williams, and it's millions of us out there.
Yeah,
but that's
a unique
name.
Yeah.
I don't know anymore, Chloe. I sure don't. When I think I bumped into someone with a name just like yours, it's not something else, Corey or something like that. So, yeah, your name is very unique.
Or you could just call it weird.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Wow, a wealth of information.
I'm going to go to bed.
Okay, and look forward to talking with you on Monday morning at 6:30, but we'll confirm that, like you said, on tomorrow. But you'll have news that I hope you can share on Monday regarding your meeting with the legislature also.
We'll see. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you for visiting us here at Culture Shock Entertainment Report. Bye-bye. Thank you. That was amazing, a very amazing talk, talking with Mr. Juan Cloy, law enforcement professional expert. That was just the tip of the iceberg of information that he shared. And today there's a meeting with the legislature. Oh, well, tomorrow. I don't know if he's talking about Sunday, today, or Monday. Well, but I think he's talking about Sunday. So hopefully he can join us on Monday morning because I know there will be much more news. And there are many topics that we didn't even get a chance to talk about regarding more about COVID-19 and the reopening of Jackson, Mississippi, the reopening of America, the state of